From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Chile suffered from one bullet diplomacy. Gandhi and King died from one bullet diplomacy. Lincoln died from one bullet diplomacy. John and Robert Kennedy died from one bullet diplomacy. We must have a higher, more moral order of conflict resolution, not one bullet diplomacy.
Reverend Jesse Jackson joins more than 150,000 protesters in Washington, D.C. Protests around the country and the world against an invasion of Iraq. And Senator Paul Wellstone remembered.
I don't represent the pharmaceutical companies. I don't represent the big oil companies. I don't represent the big health insurance industry. I don't represent the big financial institutions. But you know what? I represent people in Minnesota.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. On Saturday, between 150,000 and 200,000 people protested in Washington, D.C. in the largest anti-war demonstration in the United States since the Vietnam War. Meanwhile, smaller protests were held in scores of cities around the country and the world, including 50,000 in San Francisco. In Minnesota, some 10,000 people gathered in the streets of the Twin Cities to protest war and remember Senator Paul Wellstone. The populace Democrat died on Friday in a plane crash with his wife, his daughter, three campaign workers, and two pilots. Wellstone's death came less than 2 weeks before he was to run for re-election. News reports indicate that former Vice President Walter Mondale will run in Wellstone's place. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he's giving the military new powers to fight terrorism 2 days after special forces killed more than 115 hostages with gas the Russian government has yet to identify, ending a theater siege with the heavy loss of life among hostages as well as their Chechen rebel captors. Russian health officials admit that they did use gas to end the hostage crisis. Now, more than 115 hostages dead, dozens more critically ill in the hospital. The government admitted that only two hostages were shot dead by the Chechen rebels before the pre-dawn assault. Putin defended the use of the gas as necessary to prevent more deaths in the theater where the rebels were armed with guns and explosives. Doctors and human rights observers have criticized the government for not revealing the composition of the gas. Up to 50 Chechen rebels were also killed during the attack. It remains unclear how many of them died from poisoning, how many were shot dead. And in Brazil, Lula, the leader of the Workers' Party, won over 60% of the vote. The election came at the height of a new financial crisis, which saw the real, the Brazilian currency, lose 40% of its value this year and prompted the International Monetary Fund offer a $30 billion so-called rescue package. The crisis was widely blamed on negative investor reaction to the idea that the ex-factory worker would become the president of Brazil. We turn now to one of the spokespeople for the party, for the Workers' Party in Brazil. We are hoping that we will get him on in a minute. He is Luis Gomes. He's on the phone with us. He is a veteran journalist. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's good to have you with us. Your response to Lula's victory.
Okay. Everything here is going so nice now. Here, the people is just, I don't know, having a party in every corner, in every street. Now, the government has turned his policies, Everything's going to be more easy for us, they say. And Lula is now working with José Dirceu, the president of his party, in the transition. So they just working. In about an hour, there's going to be a deployment about the new government and how they're going to manage the whole decisions from here on to January. Because the president, the Fernando Enrique Cardoso, he told us he's going to share all decisions from here until the change of the government.
Luis Gomez speaking to us from Sao Paulo, Brazil. We now go to Minnesota, where state officials are expecting up to 20,000 people to attend a memorial service for Senator Paul Wellstone, the populist Democrat who died with seven others in a plane crash on Friday. He died alongside his wife of 39 years, Sheila, their daughter, Marsha Markison, their three campaign aides and two pilots. Police say their plane crashed in freezing rain in northeastern Minnesota. Wellstone's death came less than 2 weeks before the highly contested election that could affect the balance of power in the Senate. News reports indicate former Vice President Walter Mondale plans to announce Wednesday he'll replace Wellstone on the ballot. Wellstone was one of a kind. As a former college professor at Carleton College, who had never held an elective office before, Wellstone made an unlikely senator when he won the 1990 race. He successfully formed a coalition of farmers, union members, laborers, and activists. Wellstone was the only Democrat who voted against the Iraq War resolution. Earlier this month, Wellstone was one of the staunchest opponents of the Star Wars so-called National Missile Defense Program of increased military aid to Colombia of high-stakes testing in schools. Consumer rights activists hailed Wellstone for waging a three-year battle to tone down the so-called bankruptcy reform bill pushed by the credit card industry. But after September 11th, Wellstone voted for the USA Patriot Act. He also voted for the Defense of Marriage Act. Wellstone liked to say he represented the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. We are going to take a clip of Senator Paul Wellstone. Again, Senator Wellstone did vote against the Iraq War resolution earlier this month, joining almost a quarter of the Senate in doing that, among people like Senator Robert Byrd and others. We now go to a clip of Senator Paul Wellstone recorded earlier this month during a senatorial debate in Minnesota.
I was a teacher for 20 years. And I used to say to students, politics is not about labels, it's about trying to improve the lives of people. And I'll just tell you, it is such an honor to be a senator from Minnesota. And as I travel the state now, politics is very personal. I mean, in northwest Minnesota, farmers say it's not production, Paul. If we don't get some disaster relief, we won't have any future. In our schools, we're cutting teachers, and class sizes are going up. Two of our kids teach. I hear all about it. I run into people who've run out of their unemployment benefits. Other people tell me, Paul, I've lost my job, and now I've lost my health care coverage. What am I going to do? Small businesses say to me, I can't afford the health care coverage any longer for my employees. What are we going to do? Family farmers say, listen, we can compete with anybody, but please make sure it's a fair trade policy. Senior citizens say, I can't afford these prescription drugs, and so do other Minnesotans as well. And so many people that I talk to in Minnesota really want this economy to work for them. We've got to start putting people first again. We've got to have an economy that works for people. For me, being a senator from Minnesota is staying connected to people in my state and being there in public service for people. When my other opponent says not get it done, it depends on who you get it done for. I mean, the legislation that I've passed has been right there on education, right there on tax credits for higher education, right there on more funding for public education. The legislation that I've passed created 383,000 jobs or 388,000 jobs since 1994. Now, look at where the economy is going. The legislation that I've passed has been a good farm bill that works for our independent producers. The legislation that I've passed is the homeless vets bill. The legislation that I've passed is more money for veterans' health care. The legislation that I've passed is with the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform bill. The legislation that I've passed is prescription drugs so we can re-import it back from Canada. We passed it in the Senate. It hasn't passed in the Republican House yet. The legislation that I've passed is the children's health care bill. So I think the difference is I represent people in Minnesota. I don't represent the pharmaceutical companies. I don't represent the big oil companies. I don't represent the big health insurance industry. I don't represent the big financial institutions. But you know what? I represent people in Minnesota. I'm a watchdog for people in Minnesota, never afraid to take on those economic interests, and always I'm there for jobs, for education, for health care, for family farmers, for small business, for the people in Minnesota. That's who I represent, and that's what a Minnesota senator should do, and I sure hope that Minnesotans will give me this opportunity again. I believe they will. Thank you.
Senator Paul Wellstone, and these were his comments against an invasion of Iraq.
I'm here at a college. I'm here in Minnesota. People want you to make the very best decision. I made an intellectually and personally honest decision that it would be a mistake to vote for an authorization, a resolution that authorized an administration, any administration, to go at it alone for unilateral action, preemptive military strike, including ground war. I think that's a mistake. I think that we should work with our allies. I think it's far more important that we focus on disarmament, that we insist through our allies that Saddam Hussein live up to it, and that if, in fact, then there has to be action, that we have our allies with us and that we are part of an international community. I believe that is the right decision. So I voted against the resolution, and I thought that was the honest vote for the people I represent and love in Minnesota, for my country, and for the world that I live in.
Senator Paul Wellstone, speaking from Minnesota. He died on Friday in a plane crash with his wife, his daughter, three staffers, and two pilots. That crash is being investigated. You are listening to Democracy Now! As hundreds of thousands of people protested across cities around the world, activists in Baghdad also held a vigil in front of the main UN building in Iraq. Democracy Now! Correspondent Jeremy Scahill and filmmaker Jackie Suen filed this report from Baghdad in their latest Democracy Now! Exclusive Iraq Journal.
No blank check to attack Iraq. That was the message of the members of the Iraq peace team who gathered outside the main United Nations compound in Baghdad. The small group of Americans say they will remain in Iraq when and if the U.S. launches an attack. At the fenced-in compound at the Old Canal Hotel in Baghdad, the activists held a huge United Nations check made out to George W. Bush. The amount was left blank. As the Security Council debates a U.S. resolution that Iraq says reads like a declaration of war against the United Nations, the members of the Iraq peace team are calling on the U.N. not to follow suit with the U.S. Congress by giving Bush authorization to attack. The activists were led by veteran anti-sanctions activist Kathy Kelly.
In front of the United Nations because we believe every member state of the United Nations General Assembly and the entire Security Council has a terrific responsibility right now as these very crucial debates take place to say to the UN, no blank check for the U.S. to attack Iraq.
This week is crucial for Iraq's future, and the government knows that the only chance Iraq has of warding off or delaying an attack is if the white trucks of the UN weapons inspectors roll into this compound.
If the UN weapons inspectors are allowed to return to Iraq, they'll be working out of this building. But for now, deliberations and debate continue at the United Nations, and the question remains to be seen whether or not George W. Bush will be granted yet another blank check to attack Iraq.
While the numbers among the Iraq peace team are small, they hope that this and other demonstrations around the world will build momentum against the Bush administration's drive for war. From the UN compound, the activists made their way to the only remaining symbol Washington has inside the country, the U.S. interest section.
It looks like the U.S. interests in Baghdad are oil resources, control of resources that we use in North America.
Cliff Kindy of Indiana is an activist with the Christian Peacemaker Team.
Maybe our candles are a symbol of bringing light to a situation which has been dominated by the interests of empire that have brought darkness to a country threatened with war. And so I guess my hope is that light is stronger than darkness, that friendship is stronger than enmity, that building friendships brings security much more than dropping bombs on people. So.
For Democracy Now!, this is Jeremy Scahill in Baghdad.
And you are listening to Democracy Now! You can go to more of Jeremy's reports at democracynow.org and iraqjournal.org. Special thanks to Rick Rowley of Big Noise Tactical Media for helping to bring in that report from Baghdad with Jackie Suen and Jeremy Scahill. You are listening to Democracy Now! Despite the New York Times saying thousands of people marched in Washington and the numbers were disappointing, according to unofficial park police estimates, more than 150,000 people were out. The Washington Post had on its front page more than 100,000 people were out, and CNN reported 200,000 people protested in Washington, D.C. against a U.S. invasion of Iraq. Many people spoke, including Cynthia McKinney, Reverend Al Sharpton, Susan Sarandon, Reverend Jesse Jackson. Will hear some of those speeches, but we'll begin with former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark.
The only decent respect we can show for the veterans of Vietnam whose names are on this memorial, on this ground, is to stop all U.S. wars. And we have to do it now. No more war memorials, peace memorials. And yet every day, in a dozen ways, you hear President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Secretary of State Powell, Secretary of State Defense Rumsfeld, and above all, the mighty voice of the media saying, war now! We've got to destroy Iraq. Who have you heard say about our responsibility and our accountability for the three wars we've already destroyed Iraq with? In 1991, 110,000 aerial sorties in 42 days, 88,500 tons of bombs, 150,000 dead. The Pentagon says we lost 155, more than one-third to friendly fire, the rest to accidents, no combat casualties. It was a slaughter. You don't slaughter with impunity. It is a war crime. It is a crime against humanity. Then we impose the unbelievable sanctions on Iraq that have killed more than 1.5 million people, and every day we've known it. It's continued every day, and every day infants, children, elderly die from those sanctions. Just back from Iraq in September, the Minister of Health said the death rate continues to increase. The number of below normal weight, 2 kilos and below birth, is now 1 in 4, a midget generation. We have killed 1.5 million people with genocidal sanctions. Who's talking about that now? Where is U.S. accountability for that? We forced that. We've bombed that. We've overflown the sovereign territory of Iraq every day since 1991. We've bombed nearly every day. We've chosen our days carefully. On the 17th of January, 1993, 2 days before President Bush, number one, left office, he sent more than 30 Tomahawk cruise missiles. He hit the Al-Rashid Hotel. He took the life of Layla Al-Attar, 15 miles outside of Baghdad, with a Tomahawk cruise missile. The greatest Arab artist of the 20th century, the head of the Museum of Modern Art in Baghdad, killed. And even in September and October of this year, while we're talking about maybe bombing soon, we're bombing almost every day. When we got there in September, the first day we got there, 8 killed in Baghdad, more than 40 killed in October. The war goes on, and we claim they are evil. We better pay attention. We are destroying international law, which has some potential for peace. We're destroying the United Nations, which was created to end the scourge of war. We're thumbing at our nose at the Nuremberg Charter, which stood for anything you cannot strike first, because Nazi Germany struck first time and time again. What did Heinrich Himmler tell the Gestapo? He said, shoot first, ask questions later, and I will protect you. And that's what we plan to do with Iraq and other countries. After Iraq, it'll be more. If we don't stop this now, we'll find that we live in chaos for the rest of our lives, and God knows what will happen to the next generation. We're destroying the Constitution of the United States. The Bill of Rights is a piece of paper that's worth nothing anymore. The government takes more pride in setting aside the Declaration of Independence as well as as the Bill of Rights, as anything it does. It wants to end the idea of individual freedom. You do what the government says, and that means march to war. These are criminal offenses. They are high crimes. They are indictable offenses, and they are impeachable offenses. I've lived with the Constitution as a lawyer for more than 50 years, and I tell you, if I know anything, these are impeachable offenses. And an attack on Iraq will be genocide again. It has to be prevented. Regime change needs to begin at home. We need to liberate the United States from militarism, for God's sake. Don't you see what we're doing? Billions and billions for killing, mass killing. Who has the weapons of mass destruction? We do. Who's spending more money every day for more weapons? We do. You've got to liberate this country from militarism. You've got to liberate this country from corporate oligarchy. They control our lives. This is not a democracy, it's a plutocracy. The people don't rule here. Wealth rules. The corporations rule. They rule the Congress. They elect the president. They run the Pentagon. They own the media. We've got to liberate the United States from repression. Don't we know? We've got 2 million people in prison, for God's sake. Don't we know we execute more than one person a week in this country? What are we worth? What's right? We know what's right. We just don't stand up. So let's liberate the United States of America. Let's make it stand for decency everywhere. Let's move to end poverty and hunger and sickness and ignorance. Let's have jobs for everybody everywhere. Let's work productively. Let's reach out in friendship all over the world. No more war. No more war! No more war! No more war! No more war! We have to persevere every day of our lives for the foreseeable future. When this crisis is over, there'll be another and another. When you watch Vietnam, you realize there'll be another and another. We have to persevere to the end. And we have to follow the advice of a full-blooded Zapotec Indian who became the president of Mexico, Benito Juarez. A respect for the rights of others is peace. Let's respect the rights of everyone on this earth and reach out in friendship and love. Thank you.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark speaking this Saturday at the massive anti-war mobilization in Washington, D.C. When we come back, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Congressmember Cynthia McKinney, and actress Susan Sarandon. Stay with us.
Nas casas Bahia. Mama África, a minha mãe é mãe solteira e tem que fazer mamadeira todo dia, além de trabalhar como empacotadeira nas casas Bahia. Mama África tem tanto que fazer, além de cuidar neném, além de
Mama Africa, Chico Cesar, here on Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Taos, New Mexico, more than half the town turned out. More than 3,000 people marched on the house of War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. In Seattle, Washington, thousands marched, including Congressmember McDermott, who had been to Baghdad, Iraq, and returned protesting against war. And there were protests from Maine to Florida, from California to New York as well. In Minneapolis, thousands turned out both to honor Paul Wellstone and to protest war. We go now to the Washington rally with the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Jesse Jackson!
Brothers and sisters, a moment of silence. Let us join hands for Paul and Sheila Wellstone and their daughter, for 8 brothers and sisters who perished on yesterday. His seat may be filled. His principles and commitment, integrity, and passion and purpose will not be so easily filled. Let us rededicate ourselves to the cause of peace and justice that Paul always fought for. We thank God for his memory, for his purpose, and for that which he left in us. Amen. My brothers and sisters, Dr. King's heart would be lifted today to see so many drum majors for justice gathered here today in the name of nonviolent resistance. Thank you for taking your place today in the long historic chain for struggle. Today, Dr. King would be especially happy to see so many young people energizing a new peace movement in America. People often say the young are our future, but I beg to differ. You are our present. You are our right now. When 2 Jewish students and 1 black college student went to Mississippi in 1964 for Freedom Summer. They paid the highest price, but Mississippi moved. Goodman, Swerney, and Cheney let them serve as a model for our movement. When a small group of African-American youth sat down at the lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina in 1960, refused to leave. Americans were transfixed. The soul of America was transformed. When Dr. King led the movement in Montgomery, he was only 26. The whole world changed. When I first marched with Martin at Selma in 1965, I was 23. He was still only 36. Dr. King taught us that times of crisis were also times of opportunity. The politics could be redefined, society turned upside down, if young people acted on behalf of the moral center. When young America moves, the whole world moves. Without vision, the people perish. Without vision, we end up with division. 2 years ago, George W. Bush campaigned on the idea he would bring back unity, bipartisanship, and a change in tone in our national politics. Now he campaigns on division, Republican partisanship, and a change in regime in Iraq. I say we should finish the fight we're already in before starting to take on another invasion and occupation. Let's keep our eyes on the prize. When we act out of fear rather than hope, we get bitter rather than better. That's true for America. Acting from fear, we make the whole world nervous. It's also true for us. Acting from fear instead of hope, we create division and make our movement weaker. As we reassemble our coalition of conscience, we must not let the diseases we fight against infect our movement. Say no to racism, but don't stop there. Say no to sexism, but don't stop there. Say no to anti-Semitism, anti-Islamism. Say no to homophobia, but don't stop there. Our movement must reflect the healing and the values that we seek. We know the dangers if we go to war, death and waste, suffering, hatred, and blowback, collateral damage to innocent Iraqi children, to our own soldiers, many of them minorities and poor, to the American economy, with the war of a $200 billion cost. There's a time to every season under heaven. Sometimes wars are necessary. If you will, the Civil War to save the Union, to end slavery, was a necessary war. World War II to end fascism was a necessary war. Indeed, getting Saddam out of Kuwait was necessary. Attacking Grenada and Panama and now attacking Iraq preemptively is unnecessary. We can go a better way. There was a time for peace. Now is such a time. A time for the UN, not unilateralism. A time for pressure, not preemptive strikes. A time for international criminal courts, not invasions. Saddam Hussein should be held accountable for his crimes. That's a good argument for the international criminal court, not a good argument for bombing Baghdad. If we launch a preemptive strike on Iraq, we lose all moral authority. How will we then say no to India, to Pakistan, to China, when they consider preemptive strikes? What moral authority do we have when we say to Putin, when he invokes the Bush Doctrine or preemption against Chechnya? We lose our moral authority with one-bullet diplomacy. One-bullet diplomacy is for gangsters and thugs, not great nations such as ours. Chile suffered from one bullet diplomacy. Gandhi and King died from one bullet diplomacy. Lincoln died from one bullet diplomacy. John and Robert Kennedy died for one bullet diplomacy. We must have a higher, more moral order of conflict resolution, not one bullet diplomacy. We have a higher calling. When did we vote on preemption? When did we, the people, ever decide from a strong defense to a first strike offense? Since July 4, 1776, thanks to the victories and struggles of our forefathers and foremothers, America has flourished as an expanding democracy. We will fail as an empire. Let's embrace democracy, not empires. Let's choose leading and not ruling. If you will, be clear of the tricks of diversion. Watch diversion. If I said to you today, we're here at a rally to preemptive strikes, a rally for peace, all of you hold your right hand up. Hold your right hand up and look to the sky. Together, let's count to 10. Let's go louder. Louder. Now say, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. It is not falling. That is diversion. George Bush, Saddam is not coming, but the economy is falling. Jobs are falling. Health care is falling.
We must not be diverted. We must not be diverted. We must not be diverted. In 2 years, we've lost 2 million jobs. Unemployment is up. Stock market down. Poverty up. Tuition up. A tax cut for the rich. The CEOs get record pay. The workers lose their jobs. We've gone from 401k to 201k. It's time for a change. It's time to vote on November 5th for hope. We need a regime change in the Congress. Let's vote on November the 5th. Lastly, there's the vision of our coalition against Al-Qaeda. The danger of an ugly war. If we attack Iraq preemptively, attack them preemptively, unilaterally, we kill many innocent people just to kill him, and then to occupy Iraq, and then to control the oil, and then raise defense contracts. We as a civilized people must know better and do better. We must be a greater nation than that. On this note, I close and challenge you today. We must trust democracy, choose leadership over ruling. We must build a new peace movement based on nonviolence, reaching out to ordinary people, not just soldiers. This time, the silent majority is on our side. Americans do not want this war. Choose democracy. If we trust democracy, we'll come alive on November 5. If we choose democracy, we'll honor Paul Wellstone and Sheila. If we come alive, we'll make our nation better. Don't forget what Dr. King taught us. The arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice. Beat swords in the plowshares, spears in the pruning hooks. Let lions lie down with lambs. Let's study war no more. Someday, justice will roll down like water that rushes like a mighty stream. The struggle for peace is long and unpopular, but we must prevail. Vanity asked the question, is it popular? Politics asked the question, will it work? Morality asked the question, is it right? We must be right, be fair, be just, keep hope alive, keep hope alive, keep hope alive, keep hope alive, keep hope alive. Keep hope a lot. I love you.
Susan Sarandon.
I am here today as a mother. A mother who is frightened for my children, who is frightened for your children, and who is frightened for the children of Iraq. A mother who knows that violence escalates violence, that terrorism has never successfully been fought this way. And in fact, we have just now been told by George Tenet, director of the CIA, that despite this very violent campaign in Afghanistan, that we are now, the risk of terror attack inside the United States is as grave as the summer before the 11th. I am here to ask questions that have not been answered. How will the bombing of Baghdad, a city of 5 million, accomplish a regime change? How much will that bombing cost in lives and in money? And change to what?
to who? How much will it cost us to maintain stability in that region, and for how long? And what about our relationship with our allies? Our allies who are not with us. What about our relationship with the UN? I am here because I am tired of being frightened to speak out. We have been told that you are either with us or against us, that to ask a question is anti-American, divisive. Mr. Bush, you have hijacked our pain, our loss, our fear, and you have convinced many that to fight preemptively is the only way to protect our democracy. I say to you, Mr. Bush, this is what democracy looks like. Let us find a way to resist fundamentalism that leads to violence. Fundamentalism of all kinds in Al-Qaeda and within our government. And what is our fundamentalism? Cloaked in patriotism and our doctrine of spreading democracy throughout the world, our fundamentalism is business. The unfettered spread of our economic interests throughout the globe. Our resistance to this war should be our resistance to profit at the cost of human life. Because that is what these drums over Iraq are really about. This is about business. The business of distracting American attention from Enron and Halliburton. The financial scandals that directly connect this administration to the heart of what is now wrong with the American economy. These scandals have disappeared from the front pages of our newspapers as we argue about this war. In the name of fear and fighting terror, we are giving the reins of power to oil men looking for distraction from their disastrous economic performance. Oil men more interested in a financial bottom line than a moral bottom line. Oil men ready to expand their influence with new contracts on the soil our bombers have plowed. New contracts forged with governments that do not allow democracy on their soil for fear of losing control over the oil that governs their lives, that governs our lives. The majority in America knows this. A dormant majority in America waits with anticipation for the politician that will stand in front of the American people in defiance of the oil companies and advocate alternative energy as a way to extricate ourselves from this culture of violence that threatens our future. Let us resist this war and our impending oil war in Colombia. Let us resist fundamentalism in all its guises. Let us hate war in all its forms, whether its weapon is a U.S. missile or its weapon is a domestic airplane. Dialogue is the opposite of war. Dialogue makes peace possible. We are here today in dialogue to ask for a solution that comes from a place that values human life, that respects the rights of people everywhere. We are here to encourage nonpartisan courage. We are here to take democracy back. Thank you.
You're listening to the Washington protests this past Saturday in the nation's capital, where more than 150,000 people gathered to voice their dissent to oppose a U.S. invasion of Iraq. We'll be back with the sounds of the street and the speeches in just a minute here on Democracy Now!
Come. I say come, you sitting still in domestic bacteria. Come, I say come, you standing still in double-breasted mornings. Come, I say come and return to the fight, this fight for the earth, this fight for our children, this fight for our life. We need your hurricane voices, we need your sacred hands. I say come, sister, brother, to the battlefield. Come into the rainforest, come into the hood, come into the barrio, come into the schools, come into the abortion clinics, come into the prisons, come and caress our spines. I say come, wrap your feet around justice. I say come, wrap your tongues around truth. I say come, wrap your hands with deeds and prayer. You brown ones, you yellow ones, you black ones, you...
Now, the exception to the rulers, the War and Peace Report, this weekend in Washington, D.C., for the major mobilization against war, where estimates are between 150,000 and 200,000 people gathered in the streets. As we continue with the speeches.
Please give a warm, thunderous round of applause for Reverend Al Sharpton!
We are here today because this president has put the interest of big business over the interest of human life. He has said that he needs the power to act in a unilateral way, to go into Iraq because there is imminent danger for citizens of the United States. He didn't ask for authority to go to Florida to see his brother who had undermined democracy, which was imminent danger for those that believe in the democratic principles of the United States. He didn't ask for unilateral power to deal with the problems of public education, to deal with public health care, to deal with the problems of our seniors that can't afford prescription drugs. He is bent on having a war over oil while there is imminent danger for Americans right at home that George Bush ignores. So we come to tell you, you will not declare this wicked war in our names. It would have been good for you to be here, George, so you could see what America really looks like. Because if you looked out over these tens of thousands, we come from different races, we come from different religions, we come from different parts of the country, but we are the real America. We are the patriots that believe that America should heal the world and not bring the world to nuclear war over the interests of those business tycoons who put you in the White House. We may not agree on every issue, but we agree that it is time to challenge you. There may have been some that folded in the Senate, but there are those of us that will not bend, that will not buckle, that will not bow, and that will not in any way defer to a war machine built for profits at the expense of people. If you really want to make allies around the world, there are 1.1 billion people that need fresh water. Why aren't we getting engineers and scientists to get fresh water to people around the world? 2.6 billion people that need sanitation. Why aren't we sending sanitation engineers around the world? The world does not want our weapons. They want us to help heal and bring the world closer to one air well that is built on human rights and human dignity. They say that it's us against them. But who is us? And who is them? And why do we keep running foreign policies based on boogeyman theories? First, Mr. Bush, you said the night of September 11th, one of the most despicable nights in human history, you said we got to go get bin Laden. Now you say we got to go get Hussein. When I was a child, they used to tell kids, watch out for the boogeyman. And what you are doing to America is playing boogeyman with us. Don't worry about prescription drugs. The boogeyman is coming. Don't worry about unemployment. The boogeyman is coming. Don't worry about education. The boogeyman is coming. We are not children. We're grown, and we're not running from no boogeyman. We are concerned about defense, but we are concerned about proper foreign policy. To go to the UN and just about tell them it's my way or the highway. To stand up there and admonish them without even paying your fees is not how America needs to be seen to the rest of the world, not in our name. We want the world to know that Americans represent peace, that Americans represent rational thinking, that Americans represent those that want to heal and develop and uplift and educate. We are not a nation of bullies. We are not cowboys looking to conquer. We are thinkers looking to create. And when the cowboys go forth, they won't go forth in our names. So as we prepare to march now, why do we march? Because marching is how women got the right to vote. Why do we march? Because marching is how blacks and Latinos got the right to vote. Why do we march? It took us from the back of the bus to the front of government. Why do we march? It took Lyndon Johnson out of Vietnam and sent him back to Texas, where we gonna send George Bush. If we had not marched, Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice would have had to sit in a segregated motel in Washington. Don't tell us how proud you are of them. They are a result of marching. They're not a result of no Texas oil deal. So as we prepare now, Mr. Bush, you said that you were concerned about your father and his legacy. Well, we're concerned about our fathers too. And we're concerned about our mothers too. So when you see us marching, we know you're George W.'s son. But look outside, Mr. President. These are Martin Luther King's children. These are Allied Lowenstein's children. These are Benjamin Spock's children. We are the brothers and sisters of Paul Wellstone. We got family too. We gonna march. We gonna march. We gonna march. Not in our names. Not in our name. Not in our name. Not in our name. Not in our name.
McKinney!
I cannot come here to this place at this time with all of you without first saying thank you, Paul Wellstone, for your wonderful example of true warrior patriotism, fighting for health care, fighting for our children, fighting for education, fighting against discrimination, and fighting against war. And thank you, all of you, for being here today. We know that when good men do nothing, evil triumphs. That's why we're here today, so that it can be never said that we, the good people of the United States of America, did nothing in the face of evil. And sadly, even our own country is not the same as it used to be. The good old days are gone, but the bad old boys remain. And dangerous changes are taking place daily. Even after a jury found that the FBI went too far against Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, their families still don't have justice. The USA Patriot Act and the Secret Evidence Act erode our constitutional rights. Hard-earned savings of generations of Americans are being spent on the military and intelligence communities, while poverty and homelessness affect millions in every city in America. And now this administration wants to take us to war against Iraq. Yet all across our country and those of our allies, veterans of the last war against Iraq still suffer the health effects of Gulf War syndrome. Our Vietnam-era veterans still suffer from exposure from Agent Orange, while a new generation of veterans are reeling from depleted uranium, and they have not been taken care of. Sadly, 25% of all of the homeless men and women who sleep on our streets every night are our veterans to whom we've already broken our promise. How many more veterans does George W. Bush want to create to whom we'll yet again break our promise?
Mobilization against war in Washington, D.C., where the estimates range from more than 100,000, 150,000, perhaps 200,000 people who gathered to say no to war. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to order a video cassette copy, call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Caron, Anna Noguera, Alex Wolf. Special thanks to Emily Kunstler, Angela Alston, Orlando Richards, Simba Russo. Democracy Now!'s website, democracynow.org. Our email address is mail@democracynow.org. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer and music maestro. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.